Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And this is The Food Fight, a frank discussion of food culture featuring Australia's top chefs, producers and experts.
We'll chat about real issues and go places others won't.
This podcast travels throughout the country and we acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we gather and speak.
And we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging.
This week I speak to Josh Gregory, head chef of Muse Kitchen in the Hunter Valley. Josh was born and bred in the Hunter and spent his career working at some of the best regional restaurants in the state, avoiding the temptation felt by many regional chefs of moving to the city. We speak about what has kept him regional throughout his career, working under James Viles at Biota, the dining scene in the Hunter Valley, and some top tips for young chefs looking to advance their careers in regional areas.
Okay, welcome along to another episode of the Food Fight podcast with me, your host, Simon Evans. Just me again in lockdown in Wollongong, talking to Chef Josh Gregory from Hunter Valley, currently at Muse Kitchen, also recently put in lockdown. How you going, mate?
Living the dream, mate. The lockdown dream.
Yeah, it's, I remember my first week in lockdown. It's pretty, pretty.
It's a hard one. It's a real hard time, man. But that's all right. We got to do the right thing. Do what you can do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hopefully, it's not too much longer. But not looking too bright at the moment. But might get into a little bit of that. Good to chat to you, mate. We've met up a couple of times and chatted over the years and kind of kept in touch. So it's good to have a little a chat about what's been going on and what you're up to.
Definitely, man. I think it's like it's so nice that you know you get this sort of community and it's. Being a chef, it's the best because, yeah, you just get to meet all these awesome people. And, yeah, we've stayed in touch and it's been great. You know, it's awesome just to do stuff like this and chat. Yeah. And
it was fun, especially like being regional, which we're going to sort of talk about today. And for me as well, not kind of growing up here. I've always found this podcast great to have these conversations with chefs alike that you wouldn't normally have. So pretty awesome to go. So we're going to sort of center the chat around what it's like being a chef in regional areas of Australia. Obviously, you both have experience of that, yourself in Hunter, me in Wollongong. Yeah. Let's just take us back to kind of where you started, what your little journey's been, what kind of got you into cooking?
Go back the long way. All right. Well, I started off, obviously, I'm from regional New South Wales, a little town called Brankston, just outside of, it's about 40 minutes out of Newcastle. Grew up, sort of didn't really grow up surrounded by, you know, food. Grandmothers and those things were always cooking, but I never really gave it much thought until I was working in a pot wash in a little restaurant called Leaves and Fishes. And I was like, looking at the chefs and I was like, yeah, these guys are fucking rock stars, man. I want to work exactly like this. And so then I started my apprenticeship and I was pretty lucky that I got taken on by Troy Rhodes Brown at Muse Restaurant very early on in my trade. And I did the majority of my apprenticeship through him before I got the opportunity to go to London and work with Brett Graham at Ledbury. And then came back to arguably one of my largest influences as a young chef to work with James Viles at Biota Dining in the Southern Highlands, which was incredible and so challenging all at the same time. And then we sort of My wife Jessica and I, we were sort of in the Hunter. We were in the Southern Highlands for quite a bit. We were there for the best part of 3 years, and then we were really sort of missing our home. We're missing family. We sort of tossed around the idea of opening our own place, and the guy who I trained with at Muse Restaurant, Frank Faulkner, he opened EXP, and he sort of said, "Oh, if you're interested, I'd be really keen to do something, you know, sort of together." So we came back and we started working with him, and which was a sort of massive step to come home after working with James for so long, and realize how much of a, whilst you're working in regional restaurants, the regions are so different, I think, which is a big change, both in your sort of mindset when it comes to cooking, but in your mindset when it comes to customers, particularly. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, I think back now, like the food that I cook now at Muse Kitchen is so radically different to the food that I cooked at Biota. That I think I really say to my guys all the time, there's stuff, even the things that we used to do at EXP, which was quite an experimental sort of kitchen, I think, God, there's no way I could serve food like this now in this restaurant. It's really so much about that real cooking for your customer. Yeah. Regionality, I think, really specifies that a lot more.
Yeah, I think you're more restrained with regional to that because you know you have a smaller customer base, a different clientele, and it's very hard to do something too individualistic or possibly too out there because
definitely
doing after an open restaurant. So what made you choose Biota and going to another region over, say, going to Sydney or going to Melbourne? Obviously, you'd worked at Muse, you'd got the Brett Graham scholarship, had a decent little resume working. Obviously, you could have got some jobs across the country. What made you go to Southern Highlands?
There's a lot of reasons. We had looked at going into the city. We looked at Key. We looked at all the incredible restaurants that are in there. And I just sort of, I'd met James once before, and then he came down and did a cooking demo at the Hunter Valley. And just listening to him speak about the connection that he has with produce and the connection that he has with farmers and going foraging. And, you know, at the time I was just like so horny for anything that was Noma related. That it really just sort of piqued my interest so much. And then on meeting him, he said, you know, why don't you come down? It'd be great. And going to work there and just realizing the connectivity that he has just completely from the ground up, talking to farmers, from engaging with locals, doing whatever that he could do. That sort of is what grabbed me. And ultimately, you know, Jess and I wanted to open a regional restaurant. So we both sort of said, if we want to open a regional restaurant, we need to go to the best regional restaurants. So it was that sort of call for us. I think that whilst the draw card for the city is like, you can work with incredible people and incredible chefs that are doing amazing things, I find it difficult that they get that same connection with their locals, with their growers. You know, it's very easy to, for us here, especially in the Valley, you know, I speak to my veg guy 3 times a week. And if I don't like the carrots, then he can sort things out straight away. It's hard to do that, I think, in the city because you don't have that connection. And that's sort of really what started it, I would say, my sort of love for regional cuisine.
So what do you think gave you that mindset? Obviously, as a young chef, it's kind of hard to see outside what you're doing in the kitchen. And I think that's why city restaurants are appealing for a lot of people, because what is on the plate is very attractive. So what was the first time you kind of really thought that having that connection with producers and farmers was one of the more important things for you?
Look, I really think that after we traveled overseas and we'd seen a lot of the sort of best restaurants, you know, we dined as much as we could while we were over there. I really sort of felt that the steps that it takes to get ingredients to a plate became so much more important. And then when we sort of started at Biota, you know, I thought I had an understanding about time and place. I thought I had an understanding about where food comes from. And then, you know, when you go out to, we go out to, you know, the sheep farm that you're using every day, you're using their lambs, you're using their milk, you're using their cheese. When you go to places like Pecora Dairy or things like that, you realize you have no fucking idea about sense of place or sense of time, or honestly how hard these people work just to get themselves out there, to get their ingredients recognized. And that sort of, I really think like James is a real driver in that for me, but you know, Troy as well, in my sort of really younger years as a chef, always would put a real specific purpose on ingredients that he used, and always talk about that you treat things with respect and you treat ingredients with respect because it takes this long. You know, a leek takes 6 weeks to grow and you fuck it in 4 minutes. Yeah. Like it's that sort of mentality that I think, I don't know, the draw card of working in the city is phenomenal. But I just don't think that it ever really appealed so much to me. I think as well, just mostly because I love nature and I love that contact in between. Is it the same for you?
Yeah, it's. I think I was, you know, growing up in Wales and working in Wales. I mean, and still I find it's hard with Australia. When you talk about local, it's very different to the UK. Like when we're talking local, like in the UK, we used to, you know, we used to drive up the road, like to grab our eggs from a little box.
Yeah, 100%.
Like even some, like sometimes the cow, like the beef we'd have on would be from cows from like the field we could see from the restaurant. Like it was in the middle.
Yeah,
of the
that's it.
Nowhere pretty much. So yeah, and that's the type of restaurant I worked at. It was my first job. So I was very much ingrained in it. Probably to the point where if I hadn't moved to Australia, I was planning on London, maybe Bristol, but definitely a city. So yeah, possibly even growing up in it, I still wanted those fancy plates of food. I wanted that you know, fancy London dining room. So sure, it probably being steeped in it and that just being the norm probably led me to looking for other things. So I think I found a bit of a, you know, happy medium in Wollongong. We've still got a slight city vibe, but we're right in the middle of stuff that grows. So it's a good little balance there. But it's, it's definitely the fashion with chefs. You know, everyone wants to talk about locality, sense of place, especially, you know, 5-10 years ago, everyone was foraging. Everyone was picking weeds from the fucking...
I was out there, mate. I've eaten so many plants, you wouldn't even understand then.
Slapping it on. I think, obviously, what James did was actually using a lot of these wild ingredients in the right way and in place rather than just slapping on a dish for sort of no reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, when you're, you know, like, young chefs are, you're like a puppy. You're looking for bright and shiny all the time. Yeah. But I think the call of that sort of food, you know, I remember the first time I flicked through Heston's Fat Duck and I thought molecular gastronomy was friggin' tits. And I was like, yeah, this is the food that I want to do. I want to weigh my stocks out to the grand. Like, all of that sort of shit that now I sort of realize, God, I wish I'd have paid more attention to things that the, you know, that my local CWA women were cooking, because those were recipes that aren't going to be around anymore. And those, like, I think regionality and regional dining especially kind of, it establishes those bonds a lot easier within the community rather than, you know, cities have to make much more effort, I think, to find those bonds and find those connections, not just between producer and ingredient, but just in terms of community. That's like the biggest thing that we've sort of found, especially opening the new restaurant in Lawn, is it's so much about community. And when you realize that, you know, you're actually cooking for people rather than cooking for yourself, it's much more valuable, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's I think what the sort of trend in cooking now has found a nice balance between that possibly that kind of that Nordic, new Nordic feel and that molecular gastronomy of Spain and Europe.
Yeah,
definitely. The kind of mid 2000s. I think there's a nice balance there. But I think the main thing is, if
you can take it. If you take a shit piece of meat, there's no technique you can really do to make that a good piece of meat.
Exactly.
There's no weighing. There's no chemical. I mean, there's some things you can play around with, but you really, I mean, it's almost an old adage now. You have to start with good product.
Yeah, definitely.
Food. And if you know, if you don't have that, it doesn't matter what, you know, spherification you put on top of it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at all.
It's not really good.
If it's shit, it's shit.
Exactly. Yeah. So tell us a bit about Biota. How long were you there for all up?
I was there for the best part of 2 years. And then Jess and I did the pop-up restaurant for James in Chippendale.
Yeah,
in
cool.
Sydney. It's without a doubt the most challenging part of my cooking career, I would say. Mm. Much, you know, being in the restaurant now is challenging.
Because of the technique or the hours or the pressure, what was challenging?
A combination of everything, I think. I really felt, you know, I'd just come back from London. I'd just come back from the Ledbury. I was a frigging two-star. I thought it was a dog's bollocks. And then I sort of realized that I didn't know shit, and I didn't really understand how important simple cookery is. And, you know, James's food, whilst it is visually arrestingly beautiful, I find that his simplicity is so steeped in technique. Mm. And
yeah. I mean, Brett's food isn't overly complicated, and is quite, I know he works a lot, well, he obviously used to when it was recently closed, but used to work with a lot of farmers and would have access to the game.
Definitely.
Was
definitely.
That just because you were obviously a small cog in a kitchen? You didn't kind of
And I was, you know, I was 23. I was too young for that kitchen. I didn't even understand, you know, I didn't understand what half of the things that they were doing in there. And I think that really sort of humbled me in the sense of, you know, I won a competition to go and work there. Mm. And that sort of, get, you know, 23, that you get the old ego stroke and you think you've got your chest on. And then I was getting my ass handed to me by 17-year-old chefs who'd done their entire time with Brett.
So,
learning in that sort of environment really changes the way that you sort of see yourself and the way that you...
How many chefs were in the Ledbury?
There was 9 when I was there, plus the 2 that were on stage, myself included. And then when we came to Biota, I think the other thing that James does really well is pulls the best out of his team, in the sense that there was 4 of us, or there was 5 of us plus James. It was always a really tight team running. You know, it was one of the top restaurants in the country for a very long time.
Amazing team while you were there, especially.
Absolutely.
Who was in the kitchen with you at Biota?
Joel Bickford was my head chef the entire time that I was there. And, he was a massive impact for me, mostly for the fact that he could take all of James's completely off-the-wall ideas and you could turn them into workable dishes that weren't only workable from a flavor perspective, because James would always have that sort of down, but have them workable from a service perspective. Joel's a cracking good chef, man. He's unreal.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see where he's going. Haven't spoken to him in a little while.
Yeah, no, I don't. I haven't either, actually. I'm so bad. I always say to you know, I've really got to keep in touch with these guys, but you just never get the
chefs all over. Like, yeah. Next time we all have time. Yeah, it's like, I mean, the one time we all have like weeks of time off or a lockdown.
So. Yeah, that's it. You can't do anything. But I think I probably, the most important sort of thing that I took away from James and working at Biota is really that. There's no point to everything that we do if you don't base it around people enjoying what you do. And that's something that I've sort of really tried to drill into the chefs that I have underneath me now. And I think Troy is probably another great mentor for if you create something beautiful and you give people a reason to love it, then they will love it. You know, that sort of old adage of if you build it, they will come is really like it really does ring true. I think especially in regional when people are looking for that I just want somewhere beautiful to go. I just want somewhere, you know, beautiful to sit and have coffee. Those things really make a big difference, I think, for regional dining.
Yeah, for sure. Let's just go back a little step. So I always thought that Hunter Valley was particularly good at bringing young chefs along. Obviously, there is, for a small area, there's some great restaurants. Which obviously helps. But the is it the Hunter Valley Culinary Association?
The HCA. Yeah.
How important were they in kind of helping your progression? And obviously, you've done quite a few competitions. You've entered quite a few competitions. How important was entering things like that to you moving forward?
Yeah, look, for me as a young chef, the Hunter Culinary Association did so much. And I do think it is something that you don't see in a lot of areas, is that there are people that are so genuinely invested in the young talent coming up. I did the Brett Graham competition and it sent me overseas. I did the San Pellegrino competition that sent me all over the world. There's a million. There's a lot of different things that I think were sort of also having people that are willing to give you a nudge and to say, you know, you're meant for big things. You can go and you can do them. Go and get out and do them. And the Hunter Culinary Association in particular is really good at not only finding talented young people, but just encouraging people in the industry in general, because you know, like, I don't need to tell you how hard it is to get people excited to work a 16-hour shift in a kitchen. But I really think that they do a great job at presenting young chefs with opportunities rather than saying, you know, oh, you know, when I was a chef in TAFE, everybody would be like, oh, if you want to do anything, you want to do anything great, you need to go to Sydney, you need to go to these restaurants. And then I sort of was already working at a great restaurant. I was working at Muse, and Troy was like, well, I can show you everything that they can show you. And you can stay here. And I think the idea for me of always being a big fish in a small pond kind of made me go, well, I can stand out here, or I can go to the city and just be completely swamped by amazing chefs because there's so many people. And I think the Hunter Culinary Association really emphasize on go do your time. We'll help you. We'll send you to anywhere that you want to go. Bring it back. Bring it back to the Hunter. And
I guess what's so amazing, well, we have nothing like that in the Illawarra or the South Coast. And it's becoming even more important now with it being so hard to find young chefs and to keep young chefs and you know, hospitality professionals in the industry. We need more things like that. We need people who are willing to give their time and people willing to give their money to encourage it. So it's definitely something I've been aware of and have sort of kept my eye on as something to potentially bring to the South Coast at some point, because it's such a hard thing. Like, especially in Wollongong South Coast, good restaurants to learn in are so few and far between. That a lot of time, I mean, and less now with Cavo closing. And, you know, we used to get a lot of young chefs come through in stage, or when we did have jobs going, we'd apply. And my advice generally had to be, if you're not working sort of here or, you know, a handful of other restaurants, then you're probably going to have to go to Sydney. And that's kind of always like hurt me a bit, but that's just the reality of it.
Absolutely. And that's the advice that you have to offer to people. You know, we have the same issues here. Like, people will go, well, I did my time at Muse and then maybe I went to Subo, or I did time at Restaurant Mason and Bistro Molinez. And then all of a sudden you go, well, you've kind of ticked them all off, mate. And that next step, I think, is the hardest thing for a lot of chefs. And I do still think it's why we lose so many of them to city restaurants. And just getting that offering. And I remember at Biota, it was the exact same. It was like, well, you either work here or here. And then if you've done that, what else do you do? What's the next step for you?
Because again, that's the flip, is like, I'll exalt people who stay in regional. I think there's so many advantages that we'll probably get onto in a second. But if you can't get your foot in the door to start with, it's a very hard place to be. Because then, yeah, like I said, it is just kind of moving to Sydney, I guess.
Absolutely.
Because there's just so few so few places for good chefs to work. And that's always sort of an issue. So your plan was to open a restaurant
in the Hunter.
That was your ambition from the sort of start. What were you kind of thinking about doing, and what kind of restaurant were you thinking about opening? Was it kind of something where you knew from the start you'd have to be within a kind of construct, or was it going to be something? Is it going to be something that is your kind of your little food child?
Look, we always wanted to do, you know, it's such a hard question to answer, because I think if you'd asked me that question when I was 25, I'd have said, you know, I want to open the Noma in Australia, and that's what I want to do. And I want to make sure that, and I want to have 30 people working for me in an experimental kitchen and do all those bits and pieces. Whereas now, you know, you asked me at 31, I think if I was to open a restaurant now, I'd really much more focus on the kind of cooking that I do now at Muse Kitchen is where it's based in. It's based in everything just needs to be fucking delicious. And we use the best of the best of what we can use that's local, and we support the community in those sorts of aspects. And I think now when you're young, and I'm sure, you know, you remember as well, it's, you feel like all of the accolades and all of those things are so important to you and you push so hard for all of those things. And then you kind of realize, fuck man, I'd really just rather have a busy restaurant every single day. And I think, you know, if there's anything that lockdown screams to me, it's just how much I miss cooking a busy service more so than, that I miss, you know, putting individual flowers onto plates with tweezers. I just miss getting jammed during service.
Yeah, definitely. I've been just watching like old Ramsay episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Just like give myself that little bit of a rush whilst I'm bored.
100% delicious. Just
I need to shout for people. Exactly.
Nothing better than watching Ramsay just nail some chef for cooking scallops in too much oil.
So you touched on it just a minute ago with kind of being that big fish in a small pond. I think that kind of has negative connotations to it, but I've always felt that's kind of an advantage. It's allowed me to follow a bit more of my own path, and I didn't have to build my resume like a lot of chefs did. I was kind of able to spend time in restaurants.
Yeah, for sure. I think that that's
built my skills. And I found that it meant like I could kind of choose when and where I progressed as well. Like I sort of held myself back. I, you know, could have taken a head chef job somewhere in Wollongong, but I held myself back and kept working and ended up buying a restaurant. Do you agree with that? Do you agree that that's kind of a benefit of
working? Yeah, I completely agree. You know, it's seen as like, yeah, you're the big fish in the small pond. You didn't push yourself outside of your comfort zone. It's not about, in the end, we like the best chefs in the world do the exact same jobs as you and I. Mm-hmm. So in the end, I really think it's more about your own journey and the way that you represent yourself through your food is so much more important than building a resume based around working at the best of all restaurants. I think it's so much more, I try and sort of say this to my younger chefs now, it's much more important to have an understanding of yourself to put that into your food than it is to carbon copy other people's dishes. And I don't know if you agree, Simon, but I think like fine dining restaurants don't necessarily build phenomenal chefs. You get very good at repetition, get very good at plating up, but it doesn't necessarily teach you strong foundational basics of building shit that is based around it being fucking delicious instead of it being so pretty that gourmet traveler wants to take a photo of it for the front cover. Like, I think that is, it's changed so much for me because I used to think that that was the be all and end all for food. Mm. And it was so much about, you know, how many borage flowers can I put on this and how many, you know, freaking upside down mustard flowers do I need to go out and pick at 2 a.m. in the morning? Yeah. But now so much more, I sort of realize people, whilst food is beautiful, it's beautiful already before we do anything to it. So why don't we just focus on utilizing what is already good? And if we can do something that helps that process along and give people an understanding of, you know, how much effort goes into the produce that we use, then that's so much more important to me now.
Yeah.
And that idea as well of, you know, we're talking about being the big fish in the small pond. It has, like you said, it's helped steer my own path as well, in the sense of, yeah, I probably could have taken a head chef's job as soon as I left Biota, and I could have had plenty of those sort of opportunities come along, but I wanted to do something with Frank, who's my best mate, who we then got to open this awesome restaurant together that's now just going from strength to strength, and he's doing incredible things all the time. And then sort of getting the opportunity when I'd finished up at EXP, you know, we thought we were ready to go and open a restaurant. And then Megan, my current boss, sort of said to me, I really want you to come to have a look at Muse Kitchen. And I just sort of thought, yeah, well, it kind of makes sense. It makes sense for me to go back full circle, go back where I started, and see that progression out. And just being back in the kitchen there is, you know, really changed the way that I look at food, and it's changed the way I cook, definitely.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think one thing I try and get into young chefs is your fit in a kitchen is as important as a lot of where you're working. If you find somewhere that you like and you enjoy it, for one, that's huge, because going to work when you don't enjoy a job, it's very hard to get passionate to learn.
Completely agree.
So, sucks. Yeah, exactly. And finding your place, like if you're someone who loves regimentation and you love, you know, having your chucks perfectly folded beside you and everything lined up, then you know, one of those big kitchens might suit you for a bit. But I think chefs have to realize that you might spend at least 6 months on, you know, garnish section where you're picking herbs.
Yeah, that's it.
Which is why a lot of time you can't trust a lot of people's resumes when there's, you know, maybe they're 26 and there's 8 restaurants on there. You're like, well, how long have you spent in each one? What have you actually done in that restaurant? I think you'd get a lot more out of working in a small team where they're going to let you fillet some fish. They're going to let you do some butchery.
Exactly.
And work there for 2 years and learn some stuff rather than, you know, do 2 years in 2-3 hat restaurants and possibly not learn anything. So I think fit's a big thing. Have you found that has led you to where you wanted to work as much as you know, the name above the door?
Oh, completely. I also think as well that idea, you know, of, it's fantastic to go out and experience new kitchens, but yeah, like you said, you need to understand that in these larger kitchens, you are, especially at a junior level, you are a number, you're a cog in the massive machine, you know? And I think that is, whilst you might learn, and I'm sure you learn, you pick things up along the way, that I would rather be involved with, you know, I was lucky enough that when I was with Troy, when I was an apprentice, you know, I got to cook main course in a Hatted restaurant at 22. That's just like unbelievable. And even, you know, to the point where he would allow me to sit in and talk through menu items and those things. You don't get to do that in
restaurants. That's also huge. Finding a head chef who's willing to actually give you the time. I think
absolutely.
That's worth so much more than having a, you know, a couple of 2 hats and a 3 hats, is actually finding someone who's willing to take the time. Because, like, as you'll 100% agree, because everyone, once they work their way up to head chef, agrees, you don't get taught so much of the shit you need to know and do as a head chef.
No way.
No one teaches that.
For the fact that they don't have time. And that's, I think, you know, like, I really try hard to show, to not just teach people how to cook and how to do things, but to teach them, you know, the ideas of, this is what it's like to run a kitchen. This is what it's like to run a pass. You need to understand that people learn differently, that people take feedback differently. None of that shit sort of mattered when you're getting chewed out every 2 hours by your head chef. But and that's, I think, is a real sort of step towards the modern kitchen, that sort of archaic notion of the head chef that's unapproachable and, you know, is just a bastard to work under.
Yeah.
But you've got a good name on your resume. I think that's kind of gone out the door in so many ways with this sort of later generation of chefs, this younger generation of chefs in particular, because I think, like, they think, well, I don't need to work in a place where I get bollocked and screamed at every 2 minutes because there's fucking great restaurants where I don't get that. So I'll just go and work there.
Yeah, for sure. I remember I did, before I moved here, I started at a 2 Michelin star restaurant, the Champignon Sauvage in Cheltenham. And I was pretty, it was a small restaurant. David was one of the sort of first chefs to really, really actually forage and not be a dickhead about it in the UK and use things properly, which is pretty awesome. But I just remember going to that kitchen a little bit nervous, like it was a stage, but it was a small kitchen and it was just so calm. And everyone was having like a good time, having a good laugh, like talking shit, listening to music, and the service came, it was real serious. And the same thing, there was four of us, including the owner David and me. And like by a couple of days, like I was, you know, allowed to like cook scallops and cook some of the stuff that I was comfortable with in this group as a stage. And I was like, and that just was a big eye opener for me that for one, you could have a restaurant of that quality at 2 Michelin stars, and they had been for 20 years old or so, without being a dick, with it being calm and composed and professional. And that was a pretty big eye opener for me. So I guess the point being is that there is city restaurants that aren't, I mean, we might be stereotyping city restaurants a bit. They're all fucking.
We're regional. We're allowed.
Exactly. But like it's about fit, and you can find that whether it's regional, whether it's anywhere else. What do you think are some of the disadvantages of being a regional chef? I always found that getting the media to notice you, building a profile, things like that are always a little bit more struggle.
Oh, definitely. Recognition. I think recognition in any sort of regional restaurant. And, you know, we're the same at Biota, even though, you know, James was doing all these amazing, incredible things. It was still just so hard to get a reviewer. Just to get a reviewer out is insane. And, you know, I think the Hunter Valley in particular does get overlooked in terms of those, in sort of media recognition and those sorts of things, that it is just seen as just a wine region. And it's not particularly, despite the fact that, you know, there are incredible restaurants out here, it's very difficult to be picked up. And I really only think it's changed probably in the last 5 years. And I would have to say that the majority of it is like because of Troy. In the sense that Muse just continues to forge ahead, and he really does champion other people and other restaurants, which is like unreal because he's just super humble and honest dude. And I always consider myself so lucky to have worked there in the formative years of that restaurant.
But I always think a good restaurant can be rated by what chefs have worked there and what they've gone on to do.
Definitely.
And Muse, it seems like there's not a Hunter Valley chef who hasn't set foot in that kitchen at some point.
Yeah. And, if you didn't work for Robert Molinez, you worked for Troy.
And you've all kind of moved around. So, I mean, that's a great sign for one. It shows what an amazing environment he's created there to have lots of great chefs come through the kitchen.
Absolutely. And I think that, like, in terms of recognition, the Hunter Valley is slow in the sense as well that I don't know whether it's a tall poppy thing but a lot of chefs seem hesitant to put themselves out there. There's incredible restaurants out here that you wouldn't even know about if you didn't live out here. And I'm sure it's the same where you guys are. Like,
100%. I think, people definitely have a bit of an underdog mentality from regions.
Absolutely.
And it's probably hard because you're not sort of surrounded quite so much by the hospitality industry. It's kind of hard to know how good you are, especially when you don't get reviewers come out and you might get that one review in the Good Food Guide, which is always a little bit vague and doesn't tell you too much. Other than that, it's very hard to compare yourself to other people.
Absolutely. I think we are always in so much more of a panic in the kitchen when we find out other chefs are dining than we are in terms of reviewers, because, you know, you want to stand up next to your peers. And I think, like, in terms of knowing what you can do, I find, like, social media in particular for young chefs has become like can be so intimidating, because you look at the chefs and the quality of their stuff, and okay, it's all on a social media feed and you don't know if it took them 10 hours to plate that dish, but I think that is, yeah, trying to figure out where you kind of sit and where you stack up against the, you know, particularly when you're talking about, you know, hatted restaurants and those sorts of places, you kind of measure yourself in those sorts of ways that,
yeah,
that you don't get outside of, you know, like I remember being in, like being in Biota and we were like top of the tree and then there was 12 people coming for dinner.
Yeah,
on a Friday night, you know, and it's, I think that's the difficult thing about regionality as well, is that
that consistency of customer. I think that was our biggest, probably the thing holding us back the most to Cavaux, we felt, was, so we try and implement, you know, pre-service meeting, like, you know, like every great restaurant does. And, you know, everyone gets the phone, you know, finds out how many covers, dietaries, who's in, blah, blah.
All the briefing.
It's really hard to do that when you've got two casuals starting at 6, two coming at 6:30, you've got a couple bookings till 7, and then the dishes coming in late, a chef start, like, it's really hard to do that. And then it's even hard to do that when you sit down on a Tuesday and you go, 4 booked tonight, no dietaries.
Yeah.
And everyone
goes, it's just,
and you go,
it's deflating.
And we used to always start these meetings and have like great hopes and to keep going.
Yeah.
And you'd hit a quiet couple of weeks and you just stop doing them. Like no one would mention them again. And you stop that. It's really hard to keep your motivation, keep your consistency, and even getting your team kind of like match ready.
Definitely.
That's always been very hard, is that, you know, you're going to go, you have winter and you're going to be pretty quiet, and then you suddenly hit summer and it's all guns blazing and you're suddenly expected to do twice as many covers. That has been very, very hard to deal with and very hard to take a next step in that sense.
I think always as well, you go from, and I'm sure that, you know, Illawarra area, Wollongong is definitely the same, is that weekend trade is so massive that you end up with like this, oh, I want to try and pull some hours out of my guys. I'd like to, you know, get them down under the 50 hours sort of mark, and then go, well, shit, I need everybody to work two doubles on Saturday, Sunday. There's no question that that's what we're working. And then in the midweek, well, okay, we might only have 15, 16 people coming for lunch, but we've got, you know, 10 hours worth of prep because the weekend we're going to do 140.
Yeah.
And those sorts of challenges in regionality, I think, you know, they always say it's easier to run a busy restaurant. I think it's, those are the biggest sort of challenges, particularly, you know, being more so as a head chef now. I think that, yeah, I try to take care of the guys as much, and you want to keep them motivated as much as you can. I've always found it fairly easy to motivate myself, but motivating others and realizing that people need that out of you a lot as well. You have to be that driving force of energy in that. And some days, like, God, when you look at the reservations and you go, fucking Christ, like we worked 14 hours today and we did fucking 20 people. It's hard to be that positive guy all the time. But I think so much more now, this generation of chefs, and they look to the leader much more than, I think, I didn't ever really look at my head chef to keep me motivated. And I looked at my team a lot when I was younger, I think. I don't know if you're the same.
Yeah. Cavaux in the early days, it was a lot of fear as motivation. Trying to think what kind of would push me. Like, I generally Cavaux, there was, you know, before I took over, it was me, the owner, and like two of us. And then we used to have like a school-based apprentice come in and do Friday or Saturday if he was busy. So it was literally just me and it was, you know, just get your shit ready. So I guess I said that kind of, but I definitely didn't look to the head chef to motivate me and to push through. I guess you just kind of moved on it. But definitely it's another skill you have to learn as a head chef, is how to keep that team going, how to keep them on track, how to keep consistency when it's quiet. Like, you know, the thing I bang on so much is you set up by 6 o'clock, no matter what. I don't care if there's not into 7.
You got two, like, people coming in, you got 200 people coming in, set up at the same time.
Yeah, because the worst shit I've been in probably is when you're just not ready at the right time. And it's always been quiet nights. Like, you might have like 10 booked,
no one in till 7. Then you get like a table of four book at 6. And then you get a table of four book at 7:30 last minute. And suddenly what is still not a busy night, you are fucking scrambling for.
In the week.
Because you're not set up. And you're just like, oh my God, we're going to make this so hard. And then same now. It's like some of the hardest shifts you've had at Bangalay have been fairly quiet shifts where people just aren't ready. And it's I'll reiterate again to any young chefs who might be listening, get fucking set up.
Just get set up. Please. Just get fucking set. Honestly, please.
Just the best advice any young chef can have is just
absolutely
get your done. Get set up. Just get your set up. Because you'll be much better then.
Yeah, I think the exact same.
But it's hard to build that when you haven't got the consistency. So that's definitely been one of the biggest hardest things, one of the big disadvantages, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as well, I find in terms of, you know, those quiet services and, you know, you touched on that maintaining consistency, I find I'm at my highest trigger points on a quiet service and you pick it absolutely everything. The guys say you're like a fucking tiger in a cage when the services are quiet. And you do start to look at it it's very hard to go, and I don't know if you feel this way as well, but when you're head chef and you think like, fuck, it's quiet. Like, is it me? Is it something I'm doing wrong here? Is that those ideas of self-doubt, like really, really creep in for me, definitely, on those quiet services, especially in, you know, taking over Muse Kitchen where it's been such a formidable restaurant for so long. Yeah. To then be in charge and go, fuck, it's a pretty quiet week this week. Is it something I'm doing? Am I doing something wrong?
Yeah, definitely. Cabo especially, and some of the food we did and the changes we made definitely hit our bottom line in a lot of ways. So it was constantly, and you know, we just have periods where we were real busy and everything's going great and everyone seems to love it, and then periods where you're just dead, and it definitely can affect you and make you double think things and think things over, and you know, like even things like, do we need to do are we too expensive? Is the menu too long? Is it too scary? Do we need to pull it back? All these things. There's definitely a lot more pressure there. And it's very hard to tweak things then once you've said it. If you keep changing, that's very hard for people to kind of understand.
Yeah.
But then you also have to be very aware that price, the length of your menu, everything makes a real difference in regional, and it definitely makes it in a city as well, but it just seems to hit a little bit harder in regional when you're trying to get locals in and people on holiday and everyone in between.
Absolutely. I think as well there's that real feeling of trepidation in that you go, well, this has worked for us before. It's very difficult to move on from those things. We used to do this and it worked so well 2 years ago, or it worked for the last head chef really well. Yeah, but it's hard to then go, I think in the city, because there's that consistency of trade, there is just the sheer volume of people in the area means that they have a more consistent trade. It is easier for them to make those sort of decisions. Oh, I want to add 3 courses to the menu tonight. Sweet. But bump the price up by $10. If I put the price up by $10 here, I'll have a fucking walkout, man. That's just that's the reality. And I think when you start looking at also think as well, there's a lot more when you're in regional restaurants, I think there's a lot more focus on what other people are doing. What are the other restaurants doing? What are these guys doing? What are they doing? And I think that's really difficult in the sense that, yes, you want to maintain your own path and you want to cook your own food and you want to take a restaurant in a certain direction. But I also think that, you know, you still want to make sure that, is my food relatable? Do people actually give a shit about what I'm cooking? Is it delicious enough to pull those locals, to pull the tourists? Is it comfortable enough to cook for locals? And then is it also interesting enough to get people to come and stop at the restaurant? Is a very hard point to find, I think.
How have you found the switch and that the way customers react from EXP to Muse Kitchen? EXP tasting menu, a bit more on the sort of chefy side of things. There was more out there stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas Muse Kitchen very much based on just very tasty plates of food with good ingredients. Did you find the customers were hard at EXP and people just didn't get it?
I think EXP was very much for Frank and I. We were two young guys who it was an awesome combination, and also it was a really bad combination in the sense that we would just constantly push ourselves to do better to the point where services just became fucking impossible because we were like cooking, you know, we'd make friggin' mirror glazed birthday cakes for people and just to give them away. And these, because we were like pushing each other, we were young and we were like, yeah, fuck yeah, this is what Studio in Copenhagen's doing. Two-star restaurant. Let's copy those. Like,
yeah.
And we sort of, the trade off of that was that, yeah, people thought it was a really exciting restaurant to dine in, and it still is, but it really wasn't until I'd left that I think Frank as well, you know, he gave me so much control in that restaurant, which was unreal because, you know, it's his business. It was his, at the end of it all, it was his house on the fucking line.
Yeah.
And, you know, we would constantly push each other and develop more and more, but it wasn't really until I left that I think Frank even himself realized, actually, I need to take a step back from this and look at how can I still do my stuff that's a little bit out there,
but
how can I make that more relatable for the diners? And yeah, I think now he's got the real perfect balance, whereas before we were very much, what can we do next? And, you know, when you get a good rush of ideas, you don't spend time thinking about tweaking them, or you just go on to the next idea. I've put that on a plate. Now I want to do something different. Now I want to do the next thing. And I think that makes an exciting place to dine, absolutely, from a customer's perspective, but it doesn't necessarily give your restaurant real longevity.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough. I think back, especially like year one at Cavo, and I think of some of the dishes we did. I don't know if that was bad. I feel like we're back most of them, but we were just pretty out there. Like this one's so slow. We did a whole pork dinner. So we bought in two whole pigs and like pushed it on social media and had heaps of good feedback. It was like 200 comments and like 500 likes on this pig dinner. And we're like, oh, that's a big one. First thing we had like 30 people booked. So we had a half booked restaurant.
Yeah.
So awesome. we still got these two pigs. We still wanted to play with them. So it was good fun doing that. And we wanted to use as much as we could. So we even went up to the abattoir so we could get the blood from that pig.
Yeah.
And we did pig's blood meringues.
Mm.
So people who don't know, you can whip pig's blood and then sweeten it, stabilize it, and you can make it into like meringue. And then on that dish, we wrote pig's blood on it, but didn't really say what the pig's blood was. On that dish, we did a bright red raspberry sorbet as well.
Yeah.
So most of those dishes came back with the raspberry sorbet still.
Not eating the raspberry.
Because everyone thought that was the blood. Everyone ate the tangy, weird meringues that we had. Didn't even realize. And I think back to that, I'm like, fucking hell. That was like in like month three or something. And I'm like, how are we so brave and stupid at the same time?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, and just the things like that. And yeah, definitely similar. Like we were left to do whatever we wanted. And it says a lot. Like we didn't put any hooved animals on for like 18 months just because we were enjoying using venison and emu and kangaroo and all these
meats.
And looking back, we're just like, well, that probably explained why we got quieter.
That's exactly
it's a tough thing customers get. But I think we had to, and I imagine Frank's the same. You have to go through that a little bit to find out your style, what you want to do, like what does work, what doesn't work, what customers like. Because you don't know, like there's plenty of restaurants that do fucking weird shit and get a cult following.
Oh, absolutely.
Very few and far between, which is the problem. Yeah,
but that's there's also plenty of weird restaurants that do incredible shit that shut.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. And that's probably, I guess I go through two minds of region. I think if you're in a city and you have a bad month, that can shut you. Whereas regional, you can have a bad month and normally your overhead's a bit lower and you can kind of get through. But, like, you can have months and months and months where it's quite regional. And that's tough business.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think as well, there's the city as well. You can have a bad review and it'll shut you in the city. Whereas there is so much more there is that real sense of community, and you do get the locals that are going to support you regardless. You know, I'm sort of, you know, there's been plenty of times where we've had, you know, locals come in and they go, I'll get feedback from a waiter that go, Josh, they fucking hated that. And you know, you kind of have to go, yeah, okay, I'll take that on board. And yeah, like, okay, it was probably a bit different. I'm, you know, still happy to push the boat out on some dishes, and it's constantly finding that line. But I still know that they're going to come back. They're going to come back and support the restaurant. They're going to because they're that's what they do. That's that sense of community. Whereas, you know, if somebody gets a fucking soggy French fry in a city in the restaurant, they're blacklisted on every fucking social media site here, there, and everywhere, which I think makes it harder.
Yeah. How do you find the Hunter Valley customers when you get such a broad range? Like, you know, you can be at a restaurant, they can be, you know, some chefs, some locals, and then a table of lads on a bucks party, or a load of girls on a hen's party. How do you balance that, and how much does that kind of affect your menu?
It makes for challenges, but like I always think that if you, and it's something that, like, honestly, Brett Graham used to just drill into all of his chefs. If you just make people go, fuck, that is the most delicious thing I've ever eaten, how can you lose?
It doesn't
matter. So that sort of is the driving force behind everything that we sort of cook at Muse Kitchen. And I think that provided that you always keep that in mind, and you keep that idea of everything we do has to be as delicious as we possibly can, if you don't get too bogged down in the chefy shit, which is easy to find yourself trapped in, I think that then people are much more eager to trust you, and they're happy to come along your journey. And whilst they might not enjoy every aspect of it, you know, I'm lucky in the sense that Megan's service is just so friggin' immaculate that they take care of so much and bear so much of the brunt of my shortcomings.
That's key.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
I was going to start to wrap it up a little bit. Let's. What are some of your tips for cooking competitions for young chefs? I know it's something a lot of chefs want to do. A lot of chefs probably don't do it because they're apprehensive or scared. What's a couple of things you learned along the way?
God, tips for entering competitions. The biggest tip is just enter them, mate. Like, just give it a crack because, okay, fucking lost loads more than I ever won. That I think what you sort of really see, particularly in regional areas, you know, we talked about how hard it is to stack yourself up against your peers, but when you're a young chef and you're entering these competitions, they're your peers. They're the guys, you know, the guys that I did competitions with 10 years ago are the guys who are running restaurants now, because they're the guys that had that, I'm going to push myself to do a bit more. I'm going to work that little bit harder than the next guy. And you make those relationships with people. I still talk to the guys that I did Brett Graham with, which was 10 years ago now. And that's, and they're both doing incredible things all over the place. And that's, I think, really key. The other thing is try and not get caught up in, I need to do the absolute best thing that I can do. Truly, I think, you know, I'll very happily say I won the Brett Graham competition, not necessarily because I was the best chef in the room. It was because I was the best chef on the day. I made smart decisions when it came to my menu. I kept things flavor focused, and I thought about ease of service in a situation where you're so stressed and under so much pressure. And I always try and, you know, even in San Pellegrino especially, the pressure is turned up a lot more. You're looking at some of the best chefs, the best young chefs in the country. I always just sort of thought, well, if I can just do what I do and stick to what I know rather than trying to blow the heads off everybody and do something completely out of my skill set, you're much better off and in a better position.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I mean, definitely something. It was something I was considered when I was a bit younger, too old now.
Yeah.
And always thought I might do it, and then never did. I think I did a colleges one back in Wales, and we came second, which we were fucking robbed of, I might add. Like when I look back at the food we were doing, it was hysterical old college bistro food.
Awesome.
Pork wrapped in like 10 different things. It's amazing. Yeah, definitely. I think it's something I possibly regret a little bit of I was probably just too drunk most of the time. I just moved here. I was excited.
I think as well, like it's more important that if you're a young chef and you're thinking about getting into competitions, just think about the people that you're going to meet. And I think that has been so much more beneficial to me. You know, just even to sit in the same room with chefs like Dan Hunter, Peter Gilmore, Mark Best, like those guys are, for me, when I was a young kid doing these competitions, that was like meeting, you know, fucking rock stars, man. These guys are at the top of the industry. And just to get a chance to sit down and have a conversation with them, and they wouldn't remember me from a bar of soap now. But I think that it's so much more fundamentally as a young chef, you go, well, God, like these guys are giving their time. You get those opportunities when you put yourself out there and when you're in those competitions, and they do definitely help along the way. And people do remember, oh, we met at this, or, you know, we met at this. And
contacts are so important. And especially, like you said earlier, for regional chefs, any chance you can get to meet other young chefs, established chefs, well-known chefs, I think everyone should take it. This is definitely some good advice there. Mm. So what's anything coming up for you, Josh? Obviously, the Lawn Restaurant, which opened last year.
Yeah, last year. We opened pretty much. It was kind of a bit of a madness idea that we had through COVID last year. We thought, well, fuck, we got nothing else to do. Why don't we open a restaurant? It kind of grew out of this idea that we wanted to do something again that was really community focused and kind of build on what we do at Muse Kitchen. But we always sort of feel Muse Kitchen in the Hunter Valley is still such a destination restaurant for a lot of people. And it's so reliant on those tourism coming through. But when we thought about Lawn, we sort of sat down and Megan and I said, like, what do you really want to do? And we just said, you know, we want to give people the experience of Muse Kitchen without necessarily having to pay, you know, $105 for three courses and sit down and make a sort of massive big lunch out of it. We wanted it to be sort of like a neighborhood restaurant is really what we wanted to do. And so that's been, you know, that's been going gangbusters up until, you know, the government shut us down. But I think that in the future, like, I really just want to keep focusing on pushing the Muse Kitchen brand forward and just trying to get, the Valley in general is just this melting pot of great chefs and great ideas at the moment. And there's so many sort of restaurants out here. And I think that the more that we push and the more that we grow and develop, then there is going to be that recognition. And, you know, it's got such a recognition for wine and a tourism industry now, but I still think it's undervalued for food, same as Wollongong and the Illawarra area, same as the Southern Highlands, really. Like, they don't get that chance where they're looked at. And I do think it's about putting the good restaurants out there. It's about putting yourself out there as a chef. That's my main sort of goal going forward.
Awesome. Sounds good. It's been great to talk to you, mate. Good to catch up.
You too, man. You
good,
too,
good for, was it Monday? I've lost track of days.
Good. Yeah, man. They just lead into one horrible mess all the days.
Thanks so much, mate. Thanks for chatting. It was awesome.
Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.